Welcome to The Lovumentary, a podcast dedicated to finding out the truth behind what creates deeply passionate, connected, lasting love. In every episode, I sit down with one of the most amazing couples, love experts, or authors in the country and discuss the nitty-gritty details of what really happens inside the most incredible relationships. We dive into the good times and the bad, the sickness and the health, the richer and the poorer, and how each couple has created their own version of true love. My hope is that you take something from every single one of these stories that can help you love more fully and passionately. I'm your host, Nate Bagley, and thanks so much for tuning in. Hey, welcome to the Lovumentary podcast. It's Nate, your friendly host, and I'm just really glad that you tuned in today. Today's episode is with Maymay and Kieran. They are one of my favorite couples on the entire planet, and you're about to find out why. They've been on the podcast twice before. This is a repeat of their second appearance. One of the things that I really love about them is they just have this really peaceful feeling about them that you can feel even through the audio. It was really, really strong when we were in the room. And on top of that, they talk about this really cool concept that a lot of people avoid talking about, which is radical honesty. And they talk about how they tell each other everything in their relationship and why that's so important to them. I hope you enjoy it. And as a side note, if you're tuning in for the first time in a while, or this is maybe your first time listening, the next few weeks I'm going to be broadcasting a few episodes from the archive, some of my favorites, and I won't be recording and posting new ones because I am putting so much time and effort into my side project, Unbox Love, which is a date in a box subscription service, and I would love it if you would go check it out. It's unboxlove.com, and if you use the coupon code Lovumentary, I'm pretty sure you get a top secret discount that most people don't get, so don't tell anybody, but it's just for you. So just keep it our little secret and go sign up and have some awesome dates with your significant other. And I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you're feeling extra generous, would you please just go leave a review on iTunes for the Lovumentary podcast? I would love that so much. It would mean a lot to me. Thanks, guys. Hope you really love this episode. And I will talk to you at the end of this episode because that's what I do.
In Costa Rica, in a little beach town called Nosara. I'd gone down there for 3 months to learn how to surf and to write and do yoga. And it's hilarious because on my way there, my mom said, "What are you doing going to Costa Rica? Do you think you're going to meet a guy there?" And I said, "I'm not going to meet a guy. I'm going to do my own thing." And I was down there for 3 months and I didn't meet a guy. And it was the last day, and I was surfing my last surf, and I came out of the water and I was saying goodbye to the beach, and I turned around and I see this hot surfer standing there with his board.
This is embellishment.
And I was like, no, it's not. I was like, who is that guy? And he's just smiling at me. I was like, I gotta go say hi. So I walked over and introduced myself, and we started chatting, and it turned out that Kieran was there for 6 weeks to surf and write, and it was his first day. He'd arrived the night before. I was leaving the following morning. So we overlapped by 1 day, and we just started talking, and it was like fireworks exploded. I mean, I've never had that feeling before in my life. Like, I really felt like, oh my gosh, this is the one. And we walked up the beach together. I went to introduce him to my surf instructors who had become really good friends. And Kieran went and met them, and then he kind of walked out, and I was saying goodbye to Jem. And as I walked out the door, she said, "Isn't it funny how you meet the guy on the last day?" I mean, she'd literally seen us together for 3 minutes.
Right.
And we'd met half an hour prior. So it was pretty amazing.
The dogs?
Yeah, is that bad?
We'll probably be able to hear them, but it might just add to the charm of the podcast.
Because I can try to get them quiet.
It's not a big deal.
Okay. That is what happened. It was really completely unexpected. I do remember. I mean, that it actually happened exactly like that, except for the part where me checking Maymay out. It was one of those moments. I was, you know how like when you're in a new country and you sort of think that you kind of just maybe just push your own boundaries a little bit. And so, yeah, I was blatantly checking. It was completely cheeky the way that I was checking out, never intending that it would be anything more than, I'm just going to check out this hot chick who's in a bikini. That's the other thing, too. It's so great to meet, like, your wife in a bikini.
There's no mystery.
Exactly.
And with no makeup.
With no makeup. In a bikini. I mean, are you like, I know. Like, this is, so, like, when you're attracted to that, it's good.
In good shape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, but when she turned around, there was this connection. And in fact, it was so much that for a moment I thought that that she actually was had mistaken me for someone that she knew. Like, it just seemed that familiar that quickly. That I was like, why didn't you see things from somebody else? Maybe I look Costa Rican.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So you guys have you both been married before?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So what is different about this relationship as compared to your past relationships?
Everything. Yeah. For me, I don't want to speak for Kieran, but for me, everything. I think right from the start, from that meeting, just that overwhelming sense of, you know, I found the one. I had never had that before. Another thing is that we kind of formulated our relationship since I took off the next day and I went back to San Francisco. Kieran went back to LA through email, and we were writing each other these very honest, real, emotional, heartfelt emails talking about, you know, our struggles and what was going on for us. Like almost like an internal monologue, like a kind of journaling to each other. So I think just starting on that ground of authenticity and honesty and vulnerability was really, really valuable. It wasn't like starting with this kind of dating game and playing a role and, you know, hoping that you measure up to the other person's expectations. It was like, just bam, here's who I am.
I think that's very true. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we talk about, and I suppose being married before sort of given me this perspective a lot, is, you know, I'm always kind of just amazed by, you know, love is something that seems so tremendously strong, but then you also realize how fragile it is. It's like this immensely powerful thing that is so frail. And you can forget how frail it is because, you know, if you're with somebody, even if you're not even with the love of your life, but you're with someone that, you know, you love, it's there every day. And even just the proximity of, you know, being in one another's company and how your lives kind of interweave, it becomes like you think that it's going to be there all the time. But it's just this super frail thing, and the littlest things will start to chip at it. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you just kind of say the wrong thing and you just act a certain way, and there's just little kind of betrayals that happen that eventually just start to fray the fabric of it. And I think in this marriage, going into this relationship, I was so hyper-conscious of that. And I sort of treated like this, like we're both creative people. I mean, that's what we do for a living. And I actually kind of treated this as like the way that I would kind of, like an extreme version of anything that I would create. You know, if I'm writing something or doing something visual or filmmaking, you become such a perfectionist in that. Like I really do, like, and you know, and you are like this too. Like if we're writing something, like, well, it gets down to eventually, like, every word has to be crafted the right way. So then I wonder, like, this is the biggest creation and the biggest priority that I have. So why not make sure, like, everything is created exactly like it, everything that I say and that I do. Of course, you're not, you know, you make mistakes just like in any kind of artistic project. And sometimes those mistakes are the beautiful things. But to go about it like that is, I think, the most important thing for me. And it just seemed like the obvious thing as well, because that's, because whatever comes out of the love also ends up becoming the most creatively inspired.
So your love became your art.
Yeah, it became like a form of it.
That's
it
really cool.
Because it represents, and you know, the art is supposed to, whatever you do, represent you most accurately and most authentically. Mm-hmm. And love is like that too. It represents who you, like the love you build represents who you are and what you are and what you're about.
Yeah, I think coming into it, like the difference with the previous marriage too, just for both of us, I think it's safe to say, just older and wiser. Not to say that you can't find true love when you're younger, but I think just leaping in from the very beginning with a great deal of self-knowledge, and, you know, having been down some pretty dark roads and done a lot of exploration through, you know, myself, years of yoga, meditation, therapy, workshops, you know, I really had gotten to a point where I understood and loved myself. And I feel like that actually came first, was getting to a point, even that on that trip in Costa Rica, of really loving myself again for the first time in many years. And so then to come into our marriage from a very powerful place, I think was a real blessing of how we met too.
People talk a lot about loving yourself. Mm-hmm. What is it that you had to discover about yourself before you could be prepared to enter into this relationship? Like, break down what it means to love yourself for me.
For me, it was a very specific thing, which was, I always had this feeling that I wasn't good enough, like from childhood, having a big brother who was just a superstar, who was like a track star and a better student than me, and just blah, blah, blah. So it was always felt like I wasn't good enough, even though I was achieving as much as I could. And I think I carried that into, you know, into a relationship of like having to prove myself, you know, and trying to be someone more. And it was the divorce and then the relationship that I was in and out of after that, where I really felt like, oh my God, I'm not good enough. I'm not measuring up. And then doing a lot of work on myself to realize I'm more than enough. So that became my mantra, is like, I'm more than enough. And speaking of that, Kieran and I had this discussion when we first got together, where my therapist and his, some friend of his.
No, I just read it.
Or you just read?
Yeah.
Had shared this Theodore Rothgate quote. He's a poet. And he said that of his wife, that she was more than he'd hoped, but less than she'd dreamed. More than he hoped, but less than he dreamed.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we talked about that, and we were like, God, I never really liked that idea that my partner was going to be more than I hoped, but less than I dreamed. But we both sort of reconciled ourselves to, well, maybe that's just reality, you know? Like,
yeah, it was odd that we both, because it's such a random thing to kind of focus on.
And then when we came together, we realized that, in fact, each of us felt about the other that we were more than we dreamed and everything we deserve.
That's really cool. That's become
our mantra.
Yeah.
More than we dreamed, everything we deserve.
I love that. I think, you know, the question that I keep coming back to is the person that I'm looking for the person that I am? And it's that we're constantly searching for somebody very specific, and we forget that the first place we need to start is with us. And so my question, kind of going off of that, is if you could give advice to people out there who are thinking about getting into relationships or maybe just starting them, what advice would you give to help them best prepare?
I think, well, you want me to jump in that? First, I think it's important, I'm just going to wing this because I don't know. This is an interesting, I think that first it's probably important to know like what you sort of want, like where you are in your life. Like, are you really in that place where you're looking for somebody that you really kind of want to, you know, make a run with it, with them for it? Or you just want to like sort of, you know, I don't know what's going on. Hold on one second.
You're a popular man.
Is that you?
I don't know.
Oh,
sorry
shoot.
About this.
That's good.
Okay. So, to know where one is, I think that's important. Because the biggest thing is going back to what Maymay was saying, and sort of kind of like generalizing, it is like that relationship with oneself, you know, because you're constantly discovering yourself. And I had a friend of, it's actually a mutual friend of ours who said this, and when I was younger, we went out to dinner, it was on his 40th or the eve of his 40th birthday. And I felt this to be true because several years later this has applied to me. And he has said, like, you know, your 20s are about new experiences. You're always trying to do the new thing, whether it's traveling, parties, friends, business, jobs, etc. And your 30s become this thing, and sometimes you can't even help it, where it's all those experiences and all the things that you were. Your 30s are about figuring out what it means. It's a very sort of introspective sort of place, and a place of a lot of conflict. And it was for me, and a lot of it ended up because things happened in my life that, you know, sort of drove me down that road. And then the 40s sort of the first time I think that you feel like you at least have a bit of thing together. And so, and by that, I mean, like, I think it's the first time that you feel like, I know who I am. And as the years go on, things will get, I'll know myself more, but it's like those huge leaps have already been made. And so I think that advice is, when you feel kind of confident being yourself, that's probably the most important thing you can do in meeting anyone, is really being strong and courageous and saying, this is, I'm presenting me, not my version of me that I think that they're going to like, but me. I mean, of course, everyone, it's just, you have to present the best version of yourself in the right. first couple of dates, but quickly, as fast as you can, get to all of the flaws and the uglies of it. And it
goes back to don't be weird.
Yes.
Don't be weird.
We talked to a couple the other day, and we asked them what the key to their, like, a healthy relationship is, and she said rule number one is don't be weird. And that means, like, if you ever feel like you're putting on a show for somebody, or you feel like a robot, like you're just not being yourself, that's a sign that you're not supposed to be with that person. Mm-hmm. Or at least that you need to, like, check yourself and find a way to be yourself around that person.
Because when you first said that, I was like, we're always weird.
Yeah, we're so weird with each other. Yeah. That's part of the beauty of it. Yeah. So I was like, wait a second.
But you're weird because you're yourself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. People,
exactly. Not weird, like, I feel really weird. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Now. Right,
we're totally. Because when people are their true selves, we're weird. Weird habits, senses of humor, and the things that we do. And if you can express that full on and then have your partner really kind of make them safe and comfortable to be that, then I think you know that you've got a good situation.
Yeah. That's awesome. In terms of advice, too, like back to that topic of like self-love or being in a good place yourself, I mean, I feel that it is a cliche that we hear a lot, but what that means to me when I was 37, 38, freaking out about being single because I want to have a family. But I realized that the one thing I could control was being happy with my own life and who I was and what I was doing. And so I really just put all of my focus and intention into, you know, having incredible adventures, having a great job, having a rich family life, amazing friends, an incredible community, so that I was so happy with me and who I was and my life. I still wanted to manifest an amazing partner, but I was happy, you know, I felt good. And so I wasn't like desperately reaching for something to fill a hole in my soul. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I read something the other day. This guy said, to be in love, you have to be willing to care for somebody else's heart as if it were your own. Mm. And if you think about that, and if you don't care for your own heart, then you really can't care for somebody else's.
Yeah,
like you can't take good care of another person unless you're taking good care of yourself, because you're not going to treat that person better than you treat yourself. And that was the first time for me that I was like, oh yeah, that's why you need to love yourself first, because that's why you need to be happy with yourself. That's why you can't be trying to fill holes, because if you're not complete and you're not happy as a person, it's going to be really hard to love somebody else who is, or who needs that. So
I think that's great. When you said that, it just like actually made me think of something in terms of the advice. I also feel like this is kind of a conundrum that I wonder what it would be like if I could do it all over again. Because one thing I've learned in this relationship, or I even entered it, is it is like my full-on priority. Like everything else in my life comes secondary to this. And it's because, you know, I want us to be that close, and I want it to be, you know, one of the things that I'm most proud of being part of. But in my 20s, that wasn't true. You know, my career, you know, exploring my social situation, that was equally important and sometimes more important. And I know if there are a lot of couples who have strong relationships where their relationship is probably equal to their work. And I guess that means, you know, you're going to sacrifice a bit of closeness. But for this to work, it can only work if it is like my biggest priority. And I wonder, like, if I was given this, and we talk about this, because I think our saddest part is that we met being older. And we always said, you know, we always kind of play that game of what if we met when we were younger. And I would like to think that I would make this priority. This would be my priority. But I think that's the hardest thing when you're young. And I think that's when you need to know, like, when you're ready for that relationship. Are you ready to be like, okay, the person I'm going to find, that's going to be the biggest, most important thing. Like, if you can actually say that, then it's going to work. And, you know, it won't be like half of these marriages that end.
You are hitting on probably my biggest question in all of this. And the question is, in short, do you think that you become ready when you meet the right person? Or do you meet the right person when you're ready?
I think it's a quickening of, like, of it coming all together. I think you're on the verge of all of these things. At least it was for me. And I think it's also a little bit different for men and women. Because I think men really have to get to that right place, that right time. And we don't get there until we get there. And there are many times, and I know, like, you know, you can meet, like, a really wonderful woman, but if it's not the right place, like, if you're not anywhere close to the headspace I just described, it will not happen. So I think you have to be really close, and then I think it's that other person who just pulls you across to the other side, and you're like, all right, I'm going to make that jump.
That's a visual that's going to be in my head for a long time, I think. That's good.
Me too.
That's great. I'm curious because one of the reasons, one of our intentions for starting this project was to show a different side of the way that people love one another. I think a lot of the focus is on either the unrealistic or the despair. And part of that despair is the high divorce rate. Given that you've both had that experience, what would you say? I mean, I know that people don't go into marriages thinking that they're ever going to get divorced. So how did you're thinking about knowing, like that knowingness of finding someone and being in love, shift after the first marriage ended and then kind of going into this one? Did you feel like you saw each other differently because you were looking through a different filter?
Well, I felt that between my first marriage and then meeting Maymay, I felt I learned a lot about myself. So, and that was one of the, you know, the things that, that was the issue with my first marriage, because I, you know, I was married to a wonderful person, but I was a different person than what I, you know, I was young, and as I was growing, I felt I was kind of growing apart. So the big thing was if I didn't know who I really was, I could never recognize the person who was right for me. So when I saw Maymay, it had come to the point where I knew what I was looking for, and so I instantly, you know, could see it. Because that's the biggest thing, too. It's like, if you don't know what you're looking for, I mean, there is that thing, I'll know when I see it. But the thing that you have to see to know first, like, what's it going to be in relation to, is who you are. So I think that was a big sort of factor for me.
I think for me, it definitely impacted my relationship with Kiran, because what happened in my first marriage, because I actually, you know, found out that a lot of that was based on lies and deception. And, you know, I was in that relationship for 9 years, but I'd say, you know, I certainly taught me a lot and I grew a lot, but a lot of it, you know, a lot of it was, you know, he was not being honest. And so I came into the relationship with Kiran asking for radical honesty, which is something that we tried to put into practice immediately. And kind of this rule of like, say everything, you know, even if you're scared to, even if you think it doesn't matter, whatever. Like
what kinds of things?
So, you know, just how you're feeling, past issues of, you know, other people we've dated, things that have happened, you know, our own darkness, our darkest kind of secrets of stuff that we're ashamed of. And it's hard. Radical honesty is hard. Yeah. And I've tripped, you know, I asked for it and then I was like the first one to trip up on it. I feel like it's such an amazing practice. It's like,
how did you get yourself into that space where you could share those things with each other without needing like a safety net? I don't know. Like I would always be paranoid that I was going to hurt somebody or that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny you say that, because that I think is one of the biggest challenges with radical honesty is sometimes you feel like you say something then your partner might be hurt by, right. You know? And sometimes it does, sometimes it has resulted in a little hurt and a little wounding, but it's like kind of, just trusting that in the long run, it's going to get you to a place of being closer and more trusting. And it feels so good to feel like, oh my God, we don't have any secrets between us. Mm-hmm. But it can be, it can be tricky at times. Like, I'll be honest, like there are those moments. And I think it just, you know, for us, it came from when we did come together romantically, which was 3 years after we met in Costa Rica. There was a 3-year gap, but, we just said, like, we're doing this. And so there was a sense of just all in, 100%. And, you know, we even call it a marriage arranged by God.
It's true.
So we've kind of put it, and actually it's been super helpful to think of it that way too.
Yeah, no, it sounds weird at first, but it actually is helpful.
Because it kind of makes it feel like something bigger than either of us, which I think is really helpful. So it's like, this is even bigger than us. So I've just got to have faith in that. Like, I've just got to trust, and I've got to, and I trust Kieran. I know he's done his work. I know he's wise. I know he's going to own his stuff and I'm going to own my stuff. And so even if there is some emotional tumult and some hurt and whatever, we're going to be able to work it through. And sometimes it's that, you know, tumult, scratchy patches, we call it, like rough spots that, you know, let us get one level deeper.
Yeah. I think the truth is hard. I think the radical honesty is an amazing thing. And I think it's a big, big, you know, covenant of our relationship. But, and I think the only way that really works is you have to just have that belief, that real belief that, you know, only good comes from the truth. Even if there's immediate bad and hard and challenges, and it can be, and you just have to weigh, is the, you know, in certain truths, is the immediate sort of negative or hardship that I'm going to face, can I handle that? Because in the end, only good comes out of the truth in any situation. It may, unfortunately, in some cases, it could be like years down the line. But it'll only be good in the end. And I think it's like that belief. And
also you start believing that like the truth will come out too. Like I really believe like...
Yeah, I think I did that. We talk about that. Like the truth is sort of like, you know, this fluid, alive thing. That it will kind of come find its way in the house. Whether if you shut the door, it's coming in through the window.
One way or another.
Yeah, it's going to seep in through the fireplace.
The truth, you can either seek it out or it'll creep up on you.
It will find you. And even if it's, and again, it could be years. It could be even after you're long gone. Yeah. But the truth always finds a way to be alive.
Yeah.
Like you can't kill the truth.
So how much better to just like open the door and face it head on courageously?
I create theories for pretty much everything, and I created a formula for love. And part of the formula is a rightness filter to figure out like how to determine whether someone's right for you. And toward the end of the filter, so it kind of whittles it down from everyone in the world to, you know, the few people in the world that you could be really, really a great fit for. And one of the filters at the bottom is authenticity, which for face value seems obvious. Mm-hmm. But my theory is that you are with the spouse that you choose in your lifetime, probably more than anybody else, more than your colleagues, your family, your siblings, your children. That's your person. And the only person you're with more is yourself. And so I think the authenticity piece is about finding someone who catalyzes your best and embraces your worst. And it seems like from listening to you guys talk, every single time you don't exude radical honesty, it's almost like breaking a contract with yourself.
Mm.
And being less and less authentic with yourself and then thus within the relationship, it sort of breaks the integrity of being in the relationship. And I just think it's so interesting how there's nothing sweeter than being so real with somebody else and knowing that they still love you for exactly who you are.
Nailed it in that, totally.
And I had a question, but I just totally lost it in my passionate ramble there.
I think you said it really well.
It was good.
Yeah, well stated.
I'm so curious as to what you both think is the biggest misconception about marriage.
Well, I have an answer. You probably
have
one too.
No, yeah.
But I will say, based on experience and also common wisdom, that marriage is work. That really bugs us.
Yeah, exactly. When people say marriage is work, or relationships are work.
Or relationships are work. Well, you know they're work because I've been in a relationship that was work, and it sucked.
And I've been in a relationship where the partner was telling me, every time I was like, this relationship isn't good, she was always like, you know, relationships are work. They're really hard. They take a lot of work. And I bought into that, too.
I bought into it, and I think we all buy into it. And it's like there's a difference.
They
between,
don't, by the way. P.S.
They don't. A good relationship, it's not about work. Now that doesn't mean it doesn't take effort.
Right. You're enlightening us right now.
Because let's go back to what Kieran said earlier about making it your number one priority. Anything that you make your number one priority, you're going to put a lot of effort into. You're going to put a lot of your energy into it. It's going to take a lot of your time and your emotion. But it doesn't have to feel like work.
It and doesn't.
In fact, it really doesn't. It feels so rarely feels like work to us. It's like those occasional moments when we're doing the work of the radical
the
honesty.
Parts.
Right, exactly.
Whew, and you're like in there and you put your rubber gloves on and you scrub the kitchen, you know, but that is like 10%, if that, of the time that we're together. And the rest of the time, it feels like play. Mm-hmm. And we read this quote, I'm not a Republican, I'm a total Democrat, but it was like some Republican senator, remember? And he was getting called out because he said,
completely.
Marriage is like a slumber party 24/7. And we're like,
totally.
Baby!
That's what it feels like to us.
It's,
every night,
it's
I'm
a slumber
psyched,
party 24/7.
That's awesome.
Every night, like when we get into bed, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I hung out with you all day. Now I get to sleep over. Awesome.
And he's always like, do you want to sleep over? Yeah,
you don't have to go home, do you?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, you are home. Oh, yeah, we're home.
Always do that all the time.
Like, most
true.
Of the time, it feels like that. And it's awesome.
That's so
and
cool,
we work together, too. So we're like together 24/7.
Yeah, we're
you
together.
Guys are doing such a good job of verbalizing. So I was talking.
That's because we're writers.
Yeah, it's because you're writers. So I was talking the other day. I think one of the most important things that I've learned after talking to like 30 different couples is just what it feels like to be in a room with two people who are madly in love with each other. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed a couple who's been married for 70 years the other day.
Wow.
And
that's inspiring.
What?
Yeah, and they had the exact same
70 years?
He was talking about how he rolled over the previous night before he talked to us. He said, I rolled over and I put my arm around my wife and I pulled her in and said, you're all right, dear. I'm glad you're with me or something like that.
That's awesome.
He's 90, she's 87.
Wow.
And they still joke around and they were like holding hands and kissy kiss and everybody makes fun of them. They live in an assisted living facility now, and they said they get made fun of by everybody because they're the ones who are always kissing each other.
That's fantastic.
But like,
love
that
story.
Feeling
so
is consistent.
That one.
It just went up.
All of these, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So you got all these different couples, and they're all from all walks of life, but there's this feeling, and being able to recognize what that feeling is like, I hope other people who listen can feel that same thing, so that if they're single or they're in a relationship, they can either work to obtain that or make sure that they have that when they make a commitment to somebody to be in a relationship.
That is so, I love that you said that. It's actually, I just had a conversation with a single woman who is one of my coaching clients about that, and I said exactly that. I said, what you're looking for is not a person and a list of qualities. It's a feeling.
Yeah.
You want a feeling of being loved and adored. You want a feeling of being safe. You basically want the feeling of like a young child being coddled by their mom. You know,
well, the checklist doesn't work.
Yeah.
I've noticed.
Right. Except you want to have sex with them all the time.
Yeah. There is that.
There's that element.
but there's some couples who have everything in common, and there's some couples who have nothing in common, and they love each other the same.
Yeah.
Like the feeling is the same.
Yeah.
Like their love, the way they show it and the way their relationship works might be a little bit different, but that feeling is the same in every household we go to and with every couple. So the checklist, get rid of it, go with your feelings.
Exactly. And it depends on you know, what where you are emotionally. Like some people like things that are more emotionally intense, mm-hmm. and other people want things to be a little bit cooler. But that feeling, whatever the frequency or the you know, how intense it is, it's the same feeling, I think. It is that safe.
I like you
but
guys.
it's more than just like safe. I think it's like alluring. Like you always like I always kind of find that, you know, there's the romance, there's the safety, there's the tenderness. But I always talk about like how as a woman you have so many dimensions, and that's what excites me. So like it only helps me to help her be more of who she is, because I find that to be so intriguing. Like all of these, I mean. And you know this, Nate, like women have so many of these crazy different sides to them. And that's what I love the most, because
I like how you use the words crazy and different in that.
But it's they are. And I don't mean crazy as in nutty. I mean crazy as in wildly
multifaceted,
passionate, energetic, and coming from a man's point. And I say crazy in that way because we might have like three or four directions like that we're just so intense. But at any given moment, they're just sort of this swirl of this kind of wonderful, you know, different dimensions. And that's exciting. And I think that sometimes a lot, and this is a whole different podcast, but sometimes guys get scared of that in itself, you know.
Something I was thinking when you were talking about the idea of marriage being work is I'm a big believer that our behavior and our sense, our general sentiment and disposition tends to go where our thought goes. So what we think becomes what is real. And I think collectively there are lots of truisms about marriage. Like it takes a lot of work, or you need to have a checklist of, you know, what you're looking for. Is there anything other than those two that you think is a truism that's actually a false ism about marriage?
What do people say about marriage? What are some of the truisms?
I mean, what I see a lot of is what I think you started you off on this path, Nate, which is like that it's either this Disney happily ever after where actually the movie ends when the couple gets together and like hasn't even begun the process, or it's like this dismal, dreary
ball and
death
chain
sentence. The ball and chain. And so from the, you know, from the Disney aspect of it, it's like, well, there is so much more to it than that moment of meeting and falling in love. It's beautiful to start out that way. I mean, not all relationships do. Some great relationships start with a gradual friendship, you know? But to know that, like, this... So from that perspective, I think to know that there is so much more beyond that moment when you meet, and that you're really going to grow and change as a person. I mean... You're on your own journey, and then you're trying to make it with another person. So there's gonna be a lot of growth, and there are gonna be challenges. But again, not to make it sound like work, but that there is kind of like an intention of tackling this together. On the, you know, on the dreary side of things, I feel like if you find the right partner, that partner should never feel like a ball and chain. Like I often say that my metaphor is like a foundation. So it's like really rich soil, and then we're in there together, and my roots are entwined with Kiran's, and as a result I can, you know, branch off so much higher and farther. So it's the opposite of a ball and chain. It's like our love enables me to go even further in my own journey and also, you know, together with him. So
it's awesome.
I don't know if that makes sense.
We've got, it's about a quarter till. Okay. Can we ask you one last question?
No, we're going to put that some time.
I want to know, if you were to give people advice to have a relationship like yours, what advice would you give them? Because I want a relationship like yours.
That's very sweet of you. That's awesome.
You guys have such a calming vibe in your home, and just between the two of you, it's like you can tell there's no, pretentiousness between the, like, you can tell that you're so used to being 100% yourselves around each other that I think it encourages other people to feel that same way. And I hope to be able to cultivate that same type of temperament so that other people don't feel like they have to change themselves around me.
Wonderful thing to say, and to me, like, even hearing that, it feels it's a tremendous compliment, because what we have, our love, this marriage, like I was saying, is the thing that I'm most proud of in my life. I think there was a point in our lives where we eventually figure out that this whole thing called life is really about one thing, and that's about love. You know, like, how much can you love? How much can you receive love? How many people can you love? And that's the only thing that's sort of like God on this planet. You know, it is this infinitely powerful thing. And once we all get to that point, and we all will, it's what, you know, some people are amazingly born with that at a young age, and so many or too many other people realize that on their deathbed, because it's not even something that's open for debate. Like, I know this in my life, and anybody who debates that, it's just a question of, well, you just haven't gotten there yet, because there's nothing. Every animal, every plant just looks at the world in that way. And I think once you focus on that, then it becomes, or once you realize it, then you can easily then realize that the relationship, this marriage, is the most important thing. It represents everything, you know. When I'm at my best, you know, it shows in here and the relationship, but then also point out the things in me that are, you know, need to be worked on. And consequently, because you know the world's about love, when this is running well and when Mei Mei is happy, it makes me feel great. It makes me feel like I'm really doing something special on this planet. And then from that, everything and all that love is like what we'll put out and everywhere else, you know, whether we're going off and doing service work or when we're just kind of like, you know, doing whatever we have, like our big passionate projects or projects that we're doing that we just have to make some money. I mean, every interaction like this is just about, you know, connecting and loving and trying to help or in that way. So it just, like, this is sort of like that fuel, that furnace, that kind of, or battery charger that charges you and lets you go out and do all these great things.
Everything's going back. I muted it and it's still so freaking loud.
So my last question was actually related very much to what you're saying, and it's about something you said right in the beginning about, you know, making this relationship the first priority and knowing that that's the first priority. I think it takes a lot to get to a place where you feel like you want to make somebody else the first priority. And I think that's also something that a lot of people say is the marriage has to come first. Can you guys describe what in actuality and or essence that feels like to be with somebody else who makes you their first priority?
You need to talk about how, like, when you were younger, not even that younger, when you would see couples like this, you would be so contemptuous or look at them with such disdain.
I would.
Because that totally goes into Melissa's point, because you all feel that when you're younger. You're like, God, I don't want to be like that. I've got so many things to do. I need to, like, take over the world or start my new startup or, you know, write the next
great American
classic.
I totally was like, oh my God.
Not as much as you did.
Like, they spend all their time together. Like, they're so, don't they have outside interests? Like, there's a whole big world out there and there's important things to do. And, like, my relationship is just, my marriage, even when I was married before, it's just like one small part of who I am. And I mean, I think it goes back to what you were saying, that, you know, part of that is just maybe being in your 20s, but not to say that there are people in their 20s who have immense wisdom and have.
But because I didn't feel like that.
Because you didn't feel like that. But I did. And so I think for me, it took losing everything. And I really recommend, as advice to people, having spectacular failures. Yeah. I'm a big believer in failure. And I think my...
We're on track.
Yeah. Sweet. My marriage failing like, kind of my whole world falling to pieces was, like, the best thing that ever happened to me. Because when I was standing there, like, you know, in the rubble of my life, looking around and going, what do I have left? It was love. It was without question love. It was my family. It was my friends who stood by me. And suddenly it was like, oh my God, this is the point of life. So then finding Kiran who treasures it. And I mean, just really makes such a daily ritual practice of honoring our love and connecting. It's incredible. And he's taught me so much. I mean, I think I've grown immensely, in the past 2.5 years as a result of being with him and learning from him and watching him model that. And now I just want to spend all my time with him and I've become one of the best people.
Oh, that's awesome.
That I used to snub.
I love it. The thing I thought when you were talking was content means nothing without context. Right? So you need the ups and downs to really totally be immersed
context.
In the feeling.
Yeah. I love it.
Unfortunately, it seems like that's the way we learn the most. Mm-hmm. When conflict occurs, we have to rebuild or reform or pick a new direction. Mm. We learn the most about ourselves.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
It was wonderful. Oh, it's such a pleasure.
My heart feels full.
I'm glad you guys are doing this. Oh, wonderful.
I love that you're doing this. Yeah. This is
I'm very honored to be a part of it.
I hope you enjoyed this podcast with Mei Mei and Kiran. I'm trying really hard to speak slowly right now because Mark, who is helping me record these podcasts, told me that I'm such a fast talker. So I just wanted to say thank you for listening. And I hope you have an amazing holiday weekend. And I love and appreciate you. And I hope you tune in next week. I have a special episode planned for you. Okay, bye.